Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, and your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning as Christmas fast approaches, with Kwanzaa and New Year's only days away after the gifts have been opened or exchanged. Let's not forget a segment of our population that suffer emotional and physical abuse, especially during the holiday season. This morning, we're going to discuss domestic violence. Yes, during the cheerful holidays. It's an extremely important issue that impacts hundreds of thousands of women every 9 to 15 seconds and millions of women every year. Domestic violence during the holidays, here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Joining me this morning is Khadija Wali Yehud, CEO of Jazz Underground LLC, a full-service booking agency that provides resources and networking opportunities for artists and writers. Ms. Yehud is also founder of Mother Khadija's Domestic Violence for Youth Foundation, which promotes initiatives around the globe that contributes to the dignity, health, and well-being of women and children. Khadija currently serves on the Domestic Violence Fatality Team in Charlotte, and her life's work is eradicating domestic violence and bringing peace and security to victims of abuse. Khadija, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
Absolutely. I do want to, first of all, thank you for making that connection with Safe Alliance. I do want you to know that we've set up an interview for next week, and I'm really looking forward to that interview. So I certainly want to thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And, you know, it's just a great opportunity to be part with the organization that, you know, is strictly focusing on the community needs and helping those that are going through domestic violence.
Absolutely. Now, as you know, Christmas is fast approaching. We're only a couple of weeks away from Christmas. And during the holidays is perhaps one of the worst times of year for women grappling with domestic violence. Talk a little bit about the emotional toll of domestic violence during the holidays. And I know you have a fundraiser that you're doing, but I do want to get into the issue of domestic violence, particularly around the holiday season.
Well, you know, unfortunately, holidays, every day, every 9 seconds in the U.S., a woman is actually assaulted or beaten. And that's with or without holidays. So imagine the impact of not having the money that you need and just being under the influence of drugs and alcohol even more so, because you're in that party zone, is only going to increase the amount of times that a woman is being beaten.
Yeah.
And people just need to just be more aware of, you know, this is the leading cause of injury to women, more so than car accidents and muggings and rapes combined.
Yeah.
And that's alarming when you have a statistic that high. So how can we help? How can we, you know, take it upon ourselves as a community to make a difference? And that's what my goal and mission in life is. How can I personally help people or save one life? How can I do that?
Right, right. Now, I know that you're not a clinical psychiatrist, but there are some intrinsic, and I guess the question is, are there any intrinsic emotional baggage domestic abusers carry that triggers abuse, especially during moments where everyone seems to be happy? I mean, the joy of Christmas makes everyone giddy. So what gives with respect to this time of year, and why it seems that the emotional issues of those who are abusers, why it seems to escalate during these times of the year?
I think just the pressures of society, you know, each situation is unique and different, but there's a lot of similarities in the aspects of, you know, self-esteem issues, people that are having identity crisis, can't relate to certain things, or they might have a chemical imbalance with their brain.
Yeah.
It's a combination of a lot of different things, and people just can't handle that pressure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, they take it out on the loved ones, whether it's their wife, the girlfriend, the children, or their children. So I personally, in my situation, it was just the loss of a job. The loss of a job sparked that whole, well, I'm less of a man because I'm not working. So like I say, each person is different, but it's just having to be able to, not knowing how to cope with a loss, whether it's a job or income or death, people, you know, relate differently to situations.
Is there anything that a woman can do? I mean, in the situation where a job is lost, certainly I know that most women will be a bit more sensitive. They will reach out emotionally to their abuser. Is there anything that the woman can do to appease? And I know appease perhaps is the wrong term here, but is there anything that the woman can do to satisfy the emotional needs of a man to prevent the abuse?
I mean, you think there would be, but unfortunately, even in my situation, I was working. It wasn't like there wasn't some income coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to help the situation, definitely don't engage in any conversation that's going to lead to an argument or bringing up any of their faults,
mm-hmm.
because that's only going to increase whatever that they're going through, their anger.
Yeah.
But I really think talking things out, possibly trying to be an emotional comfort to that person.
Mm-hmm.
But like you say, if they're not willing to get counsel and help themselves, unfortunately, there's not that much a person can really do to help someone, because you got to still want to help yourself first.
Yeah, yeah. One in four women has experienced domestic violence in her lifetime. Domestic violence is a major cause of homelessness. These are startling statistics.
Right. And like I said, it's the leading injury to women more than any other injury that you see. And unfortunately, it was every day in the United States, more than three women are murdered
wow.
by either their husbands or boyfriends. And that's a day. That's per day.
Wow.
So, and I'm pretty sure the statistics I read wasn't the most current one. So
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that from last year had gone up probably one. So it's probably about four women a day
yeah.
are being murdered. And that's from the, you know, the center of
disease control.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so these are just, it's like the statistics aren't seem like getting any lower, they're getting higher. So how can we step in? How can a person that doesn't have much, how can that person give the right advice?
Yeah.
You know, knowing what the signs are of domestic violence, knowing when a person's not being themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different things that we can do to help the situation. But like I say in the beginning, the person has to want to help themselves first.
Now, what are those signs?
If a person is normally, you know, to be outgoing, if they're withdrawn, most likely keeping to themselves, noticing, you know, noticeable bruises, or the person's maybe not walking themselves
mm-hmm.
like they normally would do. But most likely it's the withdrawn. If you see someone that is just having all of a sudden emotional breakdown, you might want to, you know, approach them and ask them, hey, is everything okay? What can I do? And be prepared if they confide in you, because what do you do once you get the information?
Yeah,
some
yeah.
people just don't know what to do.
Yeah. Now, talk a little bit about the triggers. What if a woman is suffering at the hands of an abuser, what would be, and it's not to excuse the abuser, but I'm often curious about the triggers of the abuser. What is going on through their mind that suddenly they need to strike out?
In my situation, like I say, I can only speak for my situation and incidents that I have noticed. It's power control.
Right.
When a person feels that they're about to lose power or they don't have that control anymore, that in itself will let the person latch out. It doesn't necessarily have to be the person doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do anything for someone to lash out. But it could be competitive. A person's competitive, like I say, with my ex-husband, he lost his job and I kept mine. So the fact is, he had to ask me for money, which made him look bad in front of his friends.
Yeah.
So that in itself made him feel less of a man. So that, I would say more so, is the power control,
yeah.
losing that power.
Right. Now, in the news recently was the Kansas City Chief linebacker Jovan Belcher, who killed his girlfriend and then he killed himself. Investigators are still trying to determine what led to this tragedy. But do you suspect in this case, I know we don't have any evidence of domestic violence, but there seems to be issues of control here. Do you suspect that there is domestic violence tethered to this story?
Like you say, since we don't have all the details, I'm not for sure, but most likely it might not have been necessarily from him. We don't know, like I say, both sides of the story, because some men are also, you know, victims of domestic violence.
Yeah.
But most likely it had to have been some sort of control or loss of control issue.
Mm-hmm.
For someone just to all of a sudden snap and you have everything in the world. You have money. You have fame. Like, what else is there?
Yeah. And, you know, of course, some folks were really concentrating and honing in on the issue of guns. And I thought it was interesting that we hadn't had the discussion of domestic violence potentially being tethered to this story. I am learning more and more that there are some cultural acceptance of domestic violence in our community, especially from previous generations. When older men marry younger women, there's an expectation of obedience. Are these behaviors passed down from generation to generation?
I think there's some truth to that. Like I said, I haven't researched that in depth, but it's everything's a prodigy of our of what we're being taught. Mm-hmm. So if you're taught to grow up in a certain household that the man is the head of the house, what he says goes, and nothing else, the woman doesn't have a say, she has to do what she's told, of course that's going to trigger down to the children. Mm-hmm. So if a man's abusing a woman, the children see this in their minds, that's okay because it's normal.
Right.
If mom and dad love each other, why would they treat each other this way? So I'm pretty sure it would escalate to that. It has some truth to that.
Now, I'm wondering what the role of religion or how the role of religion plays into this particular issue. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the worst criminals always, you know, on their deathbed always seem to call out God's name. So I think religion can be a safe haven for people. And If a man feels that she's putting more time into her religion, he's going to want to take that from her.
Right, right.
If he is. They don't want to see us happy. They don't want to. They want to strip whatever identity that we have for ourselves and our self-worth away from us. So most likely, I've known many incidents where they go with you to church so that you don't go and tell your pastor what you're going through, because that's who you would confide in, someone that you trust.
Yeah, yeah.
So they try to prevent you from getting even that kind of help. Spiritual help.
Mm. Does there seem to be an acceptance of domestic violence in the Black community?
I wouldn't say the word acceptance. I think.
Or tolerance. Would tolerance be a better word?
Maybe tolerance more so, but since domestic violence is becoming more, people are more aware of the consequences of domestic violence, people are thinking a little bit more twice about taking it to that extreme.
Yeah.
But domestic violence affects all races. It's not a cultural thing. You have to be aware that the rich and the poor are killing each other. It's not just a class status. It affects everybody of all races, all colors, all creeds, all, like I say, the famous people and the poor. So.
Yeah.
It's not just in the Black community.
Now,
that's what some myths are portraying our communities to be like that because of so much, you know, we have so much, we're deprived of so many different things, but it's definitely not a cultural thing.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the myths that annoy you the most?
I would say my number one pet peeve myth is that poor communities experience domestic violence. You have to, that they're the only ones that experience domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously not the case.
Yeah.
It happens, unfortunately, the way the media portrays it, they're going to make that seem like that's the case. But that's one of my biggest pet peeves.
Right, right. Now, approximately 95% of the victims of domestic violence are women, and roughly 40% of all physically abused children have also witnessed interspousal physical abuse. Talk a little bit about the impact domestic violence have on children.
Domestic violence can make and break a child. They're developed, their characteristics are developed based on what they see. And mm-hmm. children imitate what they see,
yeah.
good or bad. So, but they can be taught, though. They can be taught what's good. They can be taught what's wrong. So, unfortunately, you know, if there's boys involved, they're going to repeat what their father does.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever their mother tolerates, that's what the children are going to implement. So, unfortunately, you know, we need to just stop this curse because children are affected psychologically and long-term, and it affects our future because they're going to be criminals.
Yeah.
Just repeat criminals in the system.
Are you satisfied with how our legal system has responded to this? You know, there are a whole crop of different organizations, social and civic organizations that are dealing with this. But I'm wondering whether or not you're satisfied with how our legal system has responded.
You know, We always need improvements in, especially the legal system, because legislator, everything is ran by legislators. So yeah. You just can't easily just change a law because it ethically or logically sounds right. You have to make sure it's passed by all of Congress. But as far as the restraining order process, the way that one goes about getting a restraining order, that process could be needs some tweaking to it, mm-hmm. making sure that a restraining order isn't easily dropped, that they're being pursued. This is as if the person, you know, it's a crime to commit domestic violence.
Yeah.
So to treat that just like a person that's committing a murder should still be, you know, treated the same.
Mm-hmm.
So just, there's some tweaking specifically with that I noticed personally because I went through the embarrassment of having to go to the magistrate in front of everybody, showing your scars and, you know, telling your story, you know, and someone else could be listening that might know your mate.
Right.
Or your boyfriend or significant other. So it's just there's no privacy when it comes to very limited privacy. And I think there's going to be some steps going to be legislator might or actually looking into changing. So
mm-hmm.
hopefully that could happen soon.
Now, as you know, this issue has become so pronounced in my life as a few of my friends have shared their stories of domestic violence. A woman that used to work with my wife, and obviously I won't share her name, but I do recall when she had done everything possible to keep away from her ex-husband. And it was at one point sometime last year that he had found her and began the process of stalking her all over again. And she was shaken by that experience. Talk a little bit about the absolute abject fear that women experience during these particular moments.
Well, psychologically, the trauma is automatically there. And unless you go through it, you're not going to know the trauma that I'm talking about. Just to be able to not go check your mail at the mailbox, go to the grocery store without looking over your back or just if the person's going to be in your car when you go from your job to your car, is the person there, you know, do people not know about what I'm going through? And that's what I've noticed as far as the fear and the stalking aspect. Most people aren't aware, but there's over 500,000 women stalked by their partners.
Wow. Wow.
And that's just yearly in the United States. And if we are let our coworkers or, you know, let the people that we know care about us be aware of what's going on could help prevent and save a life. And unfortunately, this is something that's too embarrassing to talk about. But I knew one lady that I was working with. She didn't tell anybody for 20 years. She didn't tell one soul.
My God.
And then, because she was living in fear, she didn't know. They didn't know why she kept moving her car every hour.
Right.
Now, you know, she's at peace with herself because she was able to, because of the coworkers, witness him coming to the job, was able to lock him up based on the fact that he violated the restraining order.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if she hadn't told anyone, she didn't tell anyone, there was no way to have that eyewitness account to testify. So it's just a matter of how do we handle stalking? How do we, you know, help protect the victims, the survivors of the situation of stalking?
Now you've just launched a cell phone drive for victims of domestic violence. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, the Women's Commission has the Mecklenburg County Community Support Services of the Women's Commission. They actually help victims of domestic violence, and they raise money for domestic violence prevention programs.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing is they're trying to do something different with their program. They're giving the phones to the domestic violence victims through the commission's own services. So that way, it's specifically targeted for survivors, so she can dial 911 when she's in a situation. Because one of the things that the stalkers do, or the batterer, they actually break your phone. They don't want you to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Women's Commission, Mike Sexton actually at Women's Commission, are taking upon himself to make sure that they're collecting old cell phones mm-hmm. or just used cell phones and refurbishing them so that way the survivors can at least have a way to communicate
right.
with authorities.
Now, with these particular phones, are they refurbished and configured so that the police can immediately respond to a desperate call?
Well, they will. Shelter Alliance refurbishes and they distribute the phones elsewhere. So they make sure that the phones are working to where 911, the emergency call, is made.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's so important to know is that we think we can't help anyone, but we have all these old cell phones because we upgrade because of new technology just laying around in our doors. And you could be saving a life by donating a phone
Absolutely.
To someone that needs one, that and their children. You know, you're saving not just the mother, but the children's lives, too.
Yeah.
So, and this is why it's so important. And I'm going to be collecting phones. It's not just going to be because it's the holidays. I mean, we've been doing this for a minute.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to continue to collect cell phones because it's obviously a need in the society that we live in.
Do you know roughly how many phones you've collected thus far?
Probably this last drive, we had a huge den, so I don't know, I didn't count them, we just kept collecting them, but I work at Mecklenburg County, and we, within the county, collected a big den of not just cell phones, but chargers, so that way, if they do have a car, they can have a car charger as well, so mm-hmm. that way it stays, their phone stays completely charged.
Now, if anyone in the audience is interested in donating their phone, how can they do that?
Mike Sexton at Women's Commission is located at 700 North Tryon Street,
mm-hmm.
and they could be dropped off between the hours of 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. at Women's Commission, which they're located at the Hall Marshall Building there on North Tryon.
Right. Now, are you reaching out to cell phone companies for refurbished phones and or private entities?
Actually, I'm strictly the way I'm going about doing it is strictly reaching out to community or just people in general in community, okay. whether it's friends, coworkers, people they might know, and it's just a referral for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure Women's Commission have their own way of communicating to get phones donated,
right.
but that would be a great idea if there are some phone companies out there that have phones returned that are not necessarily, they might be damaged, but still can dial 911. They would love to receive that donation. That would be great.
Now, are you looking for specific types of phones? You know, everyone wants a smartphone nowadays. And so I'm wondering whether or not there is a particular emphasis on particular types of phones.
I don't think that you're going to complain when someone's trying to kill you. So as long as the
That's
phone...
a good point.
Isn't in terrible condition, you know, you want to give someone, of course, it might not be the best phone that's like the most expensive, but as long as it's working condition and it's, like I say, it can be refurbished, they're collecting unwanted cell phones. So
mm-hmm.
as long as it can be, you know, they can dial 911.
How difficult is it for you as we close out the show? How difficult is it for you grappling with this issue personally?
Actually, I've come to terms with what my purpose in life is.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I have to go through this whole almost losing my life to help others. And what I've learned is you don't have to have much to help people.
Right.
It could just be a smile. It could be a hug. And it could be tangible items.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to get people to understand is giving is all, this is what life is about. It is more happiness than giving than receiving.
Yeah, yeah.
And as far as me getting in terms with everything, the more people I help, the more children that I can help, the more lives I can save.
Mm-hmm.
That's just helping me heal personally.
Yeah.
So I'm obligated to do this. This is my mission in life.
How should a woman who perhaps might be listening to this show right now and might be suffering from abuse at this very moment, what would you say to them if they are cowering in the corner right now? How can they extricate themselves from that situation?
Well, number one, definitely pray. Don't stop praying because prayer got me out of many situations. Two, don't be afraid to tell someone because speaking about your situation could be the point that saves your life.
Right.
And get the help. If you're living in the shelter, don't feel bad about living in the shelter and bear. Stay there because they have specific job programs to help you get back on your feet. You just got to rough it out. And going through the whole not having your best clothes, not being able to get your hair done, those are just superficial things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love yourself enough to where you can protect your children and love yourself enough to where you're going to grow as a person. Because the good thing is you made it.
Right.
So just leave the situation, but you have to plan to leave. You just can't up and go. Some people have done that, but plan to leave and don't go back.
Right, right. And if a man honestly wants to change, what would you say to that individual?
Definitely has to get professional help.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be just help from friends or their religious factored, or the religious preachers that they might tend to. They really have to be consistent and get and stay on top of their counseling.
Right.
It can't be you're hitting this or. And some I've seen some incidents where men go to counseling just to get the woman back, and then they stop. So they've got to be really consistent. It takes about a year or two to see a trend, if it's just going to be a trend or if the person's going to make changes, because people do change.
Yeah, yeah. And with respect to the police officer that might be arriving to the scene of a domestic violence situation, what would you say to that officer? How should he interact with both the abuser and the abused?
The police officer must know if there are any weapons that have been used or in that house. Because even on the restraining order, there's a small little box that says were there any weapons. A lot of times that box gets missed. So the more information that you give that police officer, the more he could help the survivor, the victim at the time. And, you know, we don't want to, you know, harbor or hold that person. We want to be able to, like, get that person help. And I know we don't want to see our loved ones being locked up, but unfortunately it has to happen that way for that person to take the necessary steps to improve their situation.
Absolutely. And lastly, the children. What would you say to a child who has witnessed the abuse? What should that child be doing at this point?
The child, honestly, I love hugging. I think sometimes it's best sometimes not to say anything. Just let the child feel comfortable enough to talk about it, because no one wants to relive this. No one wants to keep talking about their abuse every single day. But a child eventually will tell. So just making sure that you, you know, witness how the child's behavior is, listening to their words, their tone, things that they might say. Just really pay closer attention to abused child.
Absolutely.
And not re-victimize both the child and the mother.
Well, Khadija, you're doing a very important work, a godly work, a spiritual work, and I certainly appreciate you coming on this morning to talk about this very important issue.
Thank you so much. And I do want to say, Ron, that I am starting an anti-violence campaign starting next year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be hitting not just domestic violence, but we're going to be discussing bullying.
Okay.
So that way it impacts young people.
Absolutely. And of course, as you know, this station is always open to some of the things that you're doing. And bullying is certainly an issue that we should be tackling. So you have a place to talk about this issue. Okay.
Thank you, Ron. Thanks. It's been my pleasure.
Absolutely. God bless. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I'd like to again thank Khadija Waliyah Hood for joining me to talk about an extremely personal and sensitive issue, domestic violence. If you would like to help victims of domestic violence immediately connect with police during moments of crisis, please donate a cell phone. To donate a cell phone, please visit the Women's Commission at 700 North Tryon Street between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Or you can call the Women's Commission for additional information about how you can help victims of domestic violence. Please, by all means, help in any way you can. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week here on Praise 100.9 at 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.